Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 99. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and I'm joined once again by Alex Cazora, who is sitting in, as usual, a lot of times during the offseason for my co-host, David Todd. Alex, happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday, Dave. 99's a good number. Episode 99, we have 99 scouting reports done on Steelers Depot and probably some other 99 reference I can make I can't think of. But, yeah, things are good.
Yeah, and 3 weeks from yesterday, the NFL 2016 NFL draft will take place. I don't know about you, but these 3 weeks usually are the ones that that get to you, because I'm sure we'll have a few more mock drafts of you know from major medias coming out. But now that the pro days are really over, and the pre-draft visitor list, I'm sure within the next week and a half to 2 weeks will be all finished up. And then we just sit and wait and you know, speculate a little bit more. But it's an exciting time of the year. Of course, the preseason schedules across the league were released on Thursday, so I guess we'll spend exactly 1 minute on that. Really, not a lot to talk about when it comes to these things. But it is just another sign that the season is right around the corner, so to speak. Even though really technically it isn't, it just gives you something to look forward to. The Steelers announced that they will have preseason games this year against the Detroit Lions, the Philadelphia Eagles, the New Orleans Saints, and the Carolina Panthers. The first two games against the Lions and the Eagles will be at home, and the second two against the Saints and the Panthers will be on the road. And really all we care about, I mean, look, we'll watch all four of those. We'll chart everything that happens in each and every one of them, as we always do. But the third preseason game against the Saints will obviously be the one that will have most of our attention, because that's the annual tune-up game, so to speak, and when we'll more than likely see most of the starters, you'll receive the most playing time during the preseason as well. I think that's enough analysis of that, right?
I just hope we get out of this preseason a lot healthier than last preseason. If you can do that, I stamp that as a win.
Yeah, and obviously having one less preseason game because the Steelers do not play in the Hall of Fame game is helpful, and I'm with you. You know, the biggest thing about the preseason is coming out, you know, as injury-free as possible, so we'll keep our fingers crossed there. Pre-draft visits continue on, and boy, Alex, do you think the Steelers are going to draft a safety this year?
I would say so. I think if you're it seems like they've brought in every mid-round, you know, second-round and back defensive back prospect that they've ever found in any scouting report in between the couch cushions. 13 of the 17 they've been known to bring in or scheduled to bring in have been defensive backs. I think I'm right on that stat.
Yeah, let's see. We have, and I don't think one is a schedule for an unknown date that we've had for since the Clemson Pro Day, but we think safety Jayron Kearse is going to come in at some point. Cornerback Tavon Young out of Temple has already visited. Ryan Smith, North Carolina Central cornerback, visited on Thursday, as did Auburn cornerback Jonathan Jones. Safety Darian Thompson from Boise State visited on Wednesday. Jeremy Cash, safety out of Duke, visited April 1st. As far as defensive back goes, Deion Bush out of Miami visited April 1st. DJ White, cornerback out of Georgia Tech, visited April 1st. Safety Keanu Neal from Florida visited April 6th. TJ Green, safety out of Clemson, visited Thursday, as did safety Von Bell out of Ohio State. supposedly visiting with the Steelers on Friday, according to reports that you compiled last night. Cyrus Jones, cornerback out of Alabama, and safety Trey Elston out of Mississippi. So that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 defensive backs that have been in Pittsburgh. And we're not even, we're right at a little over halfway through with this list as we are right now. And it goes without saying that the corners that the Steelers are looking at primarily are guys that we would think are, what, third to fifth round guys?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. They're profiling, like you said, kind of those, you know, mid-round guys at corner. And then at safety, they're looking at the big physical hard hitters, Neal, Bush, T.J. Green. That's how all three of them profile. We've done scouting reports on Neal and Green for everyone to see. I just finished up Deion Bush's last night. That'll probably go up on Monday or something like that. So I'm trying to figure out if this team is just using this as a backup plan in case they don't get a corner to fall to them at 25, or if this is their plan and they're going to go in a totally different direction, if they're going to take a defensive lineman or an edge guy or whatever at 25 and they want to find out about the rest of these guys, you know, for when they target the defensive backs.
Yeah, and you know, when you think about first round targets for them when it comes to cornerback, mm-hmm. and you know, we've done the breakdowns on what they look for in relation to pretty much everything, and that includes age, experience, you know, games played, all that kind of stuff, height, weight, you know, anything imaginable. We've kind of recapped on the site already. It is in my belief that if they draft a cornerback in round one, it's William Jackson III or nobody. Are you there yet, or are you still entertaining the fact of Mackenzie Alexander or Eli Apple?
I still float the idea of Alexander around, but I think the stronger odds are with William Jackson right now. You know, and we'll see if they bring any of those guys in, or if they feel that they're comfortable enough that they don't have to do that. You know, again, we're trying to figure out what the compelling reason to bring in every single mid-round kind of corner that you can get your hands on. Like I said, it's been the farther we go into this thing, the tougher it is for me to get a read on what this team wants to do at 25.
I think, and this is just me speculating, I don't think, if ultimately William Jackson III does not come to Pittsburgh for a visit, I don't think that means anything.
Yeah, I mean, Dupree didn't come for a visit last year, right?
Right, and I'm trying to remember. I'm not sure if Cameron Hayward came in, you know, when he came, you know, prior to him being drafted as well. And I'm trying to remember if Ziggy Hood even came in. Yeah, I know they went to his pro day and all, but I'm trying. I can't remember if he actually came in or not. Yeah. Now, obviously, I think if the pick is going to be an under, you know, you would think, I should say it that way. You would think if the first round pick winds up being an underclassman, that player. Mm-hmm. Quite possibly would have been in for a pre-draft visit.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, that's the way it works for them. If they're an underclassman, you want to really get to know these guys because there's less of a body of work. You know, the scouts aren't always following these guys as closely because you're so focused on the senior class and you don't know who's going to declare. So you don't have as much information as you do on the impending senior class when college football starts up. So, yeah, we'll have to go back and look at that as one of the studies that we do and see the correlation between first-round picks and visits and, you know, underclassmen versus seniors and all that fun stuff.
It could be damning, however, in that same statement, if Eli Apple and Mackenzie Alexander are not brought in, right?
Yeah, I mean, if we find that correlation that if you're an underclassman and you're a first-round pick that you've been brought in, then absolutely. And your study that you did, which was so great about, you know, every cornerback under Kevin Colbert that's been drafted has been a senior. And you know, the starting experience threshold is right around 30 starts. We have some more information to go through. I think we're in agreement that, you know, the top priority at corner for them is William Jackson. But, you know, there's a very distinct possibility that he doesn't fall, and maybe they go in a different direction, and so you need to find out about all these third and fourth round corners, because those are going to end up being the guys that you target, you know, later in the draft.
If William Jackson III, A, either comes off the board before the Steelers pick, or B, the Steelers bypass him with a 25th overall pick, and assuming they don't draft a corner in that first round slot, can we go ahead and point to the fence right now and guarantee that no cornerback will be taken in the second round by the Steelers?
I really think they're targeting a safety in the second round, just reading the tea leaves, you know, with Neal and Joseph and Darian Thompson. I mean, all those seem like prime, you know, pick 58 candidates for Pittsburgh. So, you still have the third round, obviously, on day two. I think within the first three rounds that they take a corner.
I think I'm willing to point to the fence and say this team will draft a safety within the first three rounds. I can listen to the argument, but I'm not willing to bet my bottom dollar that they will indeed take a corner within the first three rounds. And four, yes. Mm-hmm. First four rounds, I would be very close to saying okay. Because, I mean, let's face it. When you look at several of these young corners that they've brought in for visits, I know you're a huge Jonathan Jones fan, mm-hmm. and you should be. I mean, the more tape you watch of him, you can really see why the Steelers are attracted to him. You think he's more of a third round prospect, but mm-hmm. outside of him, are any of these corners that they brought in, you know, guys that will go in the top three rounds?
Right. Yeah. No. I totally get the point you're making. I don't think White will. I don't think Jones will. I don't think Tavon Young. Tavon Young could. But I think, you know, fourth round probably seems more likely. So, I mean, maybe this team has a plan to double dip. You know, they've done that many times before. So, again, trying to get a read on this team. Obviously, you know, defensive back heavy, that's pretty obvious, and that was pretty intuitive knowing the team's needs going into this thing. I'm just trying to figure out what it's an indication of.
And these safeties, when you look at them, you know, outside a few, of course, Jayron Kearse is going to be more of a later round mm-hmm. prospect out of Clemson. But the bulk of the top rated safeties, talking about Darian Thompson, Jeremy Cash, Keanu Neal, Von Bell, those are all guys that you could see second round guys, which would lead you to believe that. That's going to be the target. However, comma, when you look at a guy like Carl Joseph, I view him as the only safety that I would put my stamp of approval on being the 25th overall, you know, first round selection. Would you agree with that or no?
No, I would agree with that. You know, if you assume that he's okay medically and that the doctors are comfortable with him and there's no indication that they won't be or shouldn't be, that would probably be the only guy I think you could make a case for. Thompson's, you know, he didn't time well enough. Neal's got too many holes in his game, and there's not really anyone else there worth talking about at safety. I don't think Von Bell is going to be the 25th pick. So I think Joseph's the only guy, but you know, I think we've kind of established that you're looking secondary, you know, safety round two, corner in that 3 to 4 range. Still trying to figure out 25 though. I mean, I am too.
You
tell me, Dave. What are you thinking?
It's easier for me to take rounds, let's say 2 through 4 at this point, mm-hmm. and write in five names that I think could be the possible selection. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to excuse me, voice is messed up this morning. But when it comes to the 25th overall selection, you know, I think you have to put William Jackson III as a possibility mm-hmm. in there, although I'm starting to get the feeling, Alex, that he's going to be off the board.
Yeah, and we mentioned that a while back, and Billings can fall in the same boat. So hypothetically, I'm going to put you on the spot here because I know you love to do that to me over the times, but let's assume that Andrew Billings and William Jackson are both off the board. Who are maybe your top two or three guys you're looking at there at 25?
I think you have to really start thinking about Carl Joseph there.
Yeah.
You know, who else? I mean, I'm not convinced Shaq Lawson mm-hmm. is going to fall down that far. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm not a big fan of his. A'shaun Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they brought him in for a pre-draft visit. I guess you have to pencil him in now. I mean, he's a first round he's going to go in the first round, we think, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Probably post 15, and more than likely post 20 pick. So I think you're almost forced to write his name in there. Although I don't know where you fall in on A'shaun Robinson.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about him. Though he is young. I think he's still only 20 years old.
Right, so you know, I think you have to throw him in there.
You know, Tony Pauline had that report about Correa, the outside linebacker from Boise. As much as I'm lukewarm on it, I could see it. You know, a name in there.
I think that name would surprise me more than A'shaun, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just you know, Pauline's pretty into
sure.
So I wouldn't really support the idea, but. You know, again, you could throw up Calhoun, my guy, though there's not really any reported interest in that. But it gets a whole lot tougher to try to figure out where they want to go.
And then, I guess you have to, who's the other edge rusher? Spence?
Yeah. I mean, you know, someone's going to fall. I mean, you know, I don't know who it's going to be and what position, but someone's probably going to fall. And if a Noah Spence does, I mean, you talk about risk-reward based on, you know, what else is on the board. I mean, is there anyone else that can come to the talent and the potential that Noah Spence has? Probably not. So, you know, I'm not opposed at all to Noah Spence at 25 if he falls, like Dupree did last year.
And he's one of those players that when you look at and factor in Steelers history, you would have to put an asterisk next to because he did play at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking about the whole Power Five, you know, conference thing and prerequisite as far as that goes, technically, you know, you could probably say that, mm-hmm. you know, he qualifies being as how he did, of course, play at Ohio State. Yeah.
I really think Spence is going to fall. I've been saying this for a while now. I think his run defense still has some work to do. I think given some of the off-the-field concerns that he has, you know, I know a lot of people viewed him as a top 10, top 15 guy. I've been saying for a while, mid-late first round. I really think there's a strong chance he's on the board at 25, and that could very well end up being the pick for Pittsburgh, especially if William Jackson isn't there.
If he's not brought in for a pre-draft visit, does that change the likelihood?
Oh, man.
Based on his character.
Yeah.
You know, we know he checks a lot of the other boxes, but if he's – you would think that he would be a guy that you bring in for a pre-draft visit because of his past.
Yeah, well, that's a really good point. Unless, you know, the team feels comfortable from what they've learned from the combine, the Senior Bowl. I bet they talk to him at the Senior Bowl. You don't get as much time as you do, obviously, for with a pre-draft visit. Yeah, you know, it's tough to gauge because, you know, even though we're not totally sure of the correlation between first-round picks and pre-draft visits, basically the only first-round candidate the Steelers have brought in for a visit is A'shaun Robinson. They focus so much on the round two and back. So you're not really getting a strong indication of where this team's going to go. And, you know, we do only have 13 of these guys left, you know, to bring in for the 30. So is it the Steelers, again, being very close to the vest or what? I'm just really struggling with it, Dave.
Is a guy like Reggie Ragland a possibility that we should be considering there?
I mean, I've circled him for a while now. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think the big question is just, you know, what does this team see the future of inside linebacker being? Are they going to morph into that, you know, dime base with a guy like, let's say, Jeremy Cash being that kind of faux inside linebacker or not? I have no idea what the answer to that question is. Obviously, they brought in Cash. They brought in Jatavius Brown. Both those guys kind of fit that mold. We know Timmons. We know Vince Williams are in the last year of their deal. We know the league is trending towards that. I just have no idea philosophically if Pittsburgh would want to do that as a base defense. If they do want to move to that dime defense, then it's probably going to take Ragland out. If they don't and they want to find the true replacement to Lawrence Timmons, then sure, I think Ragland's your guy. And like I've said before, I think you can get him snaps on the edge in some sub-package football on third down. I think there are ways, you know, and there is a path to get him on the field, you know, in year one. So, you know, he's a guy I've always thought of. You know, but it just depends really on what this team wants to do schematically going forward. What is in their 3-year plan, their 5-year plan, and obviously we're not privy to that.
We could open up the drawer and take out our tinfoil hats and put them out on as well too, and say, well, that's the, you know, the reason why the Steelers have yet to extend Lawrence Timmons, because they want to wait to get past the draft. Because obviously, if you draft a guy like Reggie Ragland in the first round, you're by year two, you're going to want him on the field, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great point. You know, I've had Ragland in consideration for a while now. I want to see some of these guys come in for a visit, you know, make my job a little bit easier and clean up that picture a little bit.
Anybody else? I mean, is there anybody else we should have in that group of players? I mean, is a guy like Leonard Floyd, or is a guy like, well, you mentioned Calhoun, you know, are these guys that we should have kind of in that group of, I don't know, 5 to 7.
Yeah, I mean, I want, you know, I think thinking outside the conventional wisdom is important, because we, you know, sometimes the media gets so focused on 2 or 3 guys. If you look at these mock drafts, they're all going to say William Jackson or Eli Apple or Mackenzie Alexander. I mean, that's just the way that they're going to go. They're pretty expected. They're pretty boring at this point. So, yeah, you can throw in Floyd. You know, and as much as it's going to anger the fan base, I want to throw in a couple offensive options too. I want to throw in Taylor Decker from Ohio State. I think he's a great player. He's a guy that shut down Shalique Calhoun. I mean, I won't even deny that, and I'm a big fan of Calhoun. I want to throw in a Josh Doctson or a Corey Coleman, because both those guys are super athletes. The Steelers crave at the position, and we know in 2017 this team could have just A.B. and Sammy Coates at wide receiver and a lot of unknowns behind it. So, you know, I'm okay with throwing in those offensive positions, knowing that this team probably is going to target safety in the second round, and it's probably going to target corner in the third, fourth round. So if you go, you know, offense in the first, and you go safety in the second, and corner in the third, fourth, you know, that wouldn't surprise me in the least, and you still kind of fill your needs.
The funny thing is, so far with the few offensive linemen that the Steelers have brought in, and I'm guessing they'll bring in probably maybe one or two more throughout this process, most of these guys have been later round tackle, guard kind of prospects. I'm talking about Gerald Hawkins out of LSU and Caleb Benavidez. How do you pronounce his last name?
Beninock,
I think it is, out of UCLA. But both those guys are, you know, fifth rounders, in my opinion, at best, and more likely maybe, what, 6 rounders with them. So they're obviously looking at those type of guys, and when you attach kind of rounds to them, you could see this team probably drafting an offensive lineman, you know, in the last 2 rounds there. Now, Decker is a guy that they didn't meet with at the combine, and I got a funny feeling that he's going to be off the board.
I mean, he very well could be. I mean, yeah, I mean, he's one of the top 3 tackles in this class.
But I think you, because of the slight possibility that he could drop, you know, I think you have to include him.
What about Mason Spriggs? I mean, they had some interest in him at Indiana's pro day, and he fits the athletic mold that they look for.
Yeah, boy, this fan base would go nuts if if it's any offensive player, the fan base is going to go nuts to start with. If it's an inside linebacker such as a Ragland, I think they would tend to go nuts. Depending on the defensive lineman, I think there's a good chance that they'll go nuts.
So you're saying unless it's a corner or a safety, they're going to go nuts. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, basically. you know, look, here's the thing is, I think we're going to be able to have some more tea leaves here over the rest of the next couple weeks as we fill out. Surely they're not going to bring in a total of about 20 defensive backs, right?
I hope not. They got to start looking at some other positions. I mean, my goodness. I mean, I'm all for defensive back upgrading too, but you can't have the whole 30 be just short defensive backs. I mean, it's you think that well's got to be pretty tapped out at this point.
Yeah, and especially when you look at some of the lists you've compiled about kind of guys that the Steelers look at, and here's something, you know, that we haven't really seen yet. technically, it's been mostly defensive guys that they brought in outside of the two offensive linemen, and of course I'm not counting Tyler Boyd and J.P. Holtz, the local guys, mm-hmm. that they have brought in. So a few weeks from now, when we're talking about this pre-draft visitor list ahead of the draft, you know, how many wide receivers do you think are going to be brought in? How many, how many more offensive linemen are going to be brought in? Will a tight end or two be brought in? I think is a position both inside and outside we could see on the visitor list, and a handful of defensive linemen, but they're running out of numbers. they're running out of numbers to hand out here.
Yeah, I want to see them bring in an edge guy. I mean, we know that's a position they have to upgrade, even if it's not in round one. Like I said before, Dave, my fear is that, you know, assuming James Harrison is going to come back and seeing the workout videos that he's putting in, it sounds like he's going to come back. My concern is that they're going to ignore this position for another year, and then it's 2017. You got Jarvis in the same place. You have Moats another year older. James Harrison is finally back on his couch, you know, forever. And you don't have a lot of that at the position. And you're going to really struggle to try to manufacture a pass rush. So I want to see some edge guys be brought in. I want to see a little bit, a little bit of diversity in the guys that you bring in. Because they're going to draft, they're going to entertain the ideas of a tight end in the mid to late rounds and a tackle, like you said, potentially, in the late rounds. I'm almost positive they're going to draft an offensive lineman at some point. We want to, make that pool a little bit more diverse.
And you would have to think out of everything that's transpired, not only history, but with Martavis and with the situation with Marcus Wheaton. I will be shocked if Marcus Wheaton is wearing a Steelers uniform in 2017. I think you would agree with that, right?
I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, I get asked about that almost once a day. I mean, I don't even think about it that much because there's so many variables that could come into play. I'm going to see how 2016 goes, and I'll tackle it from there. But I understand there is a very real possibility that he's somewhere else in 2017.
Well, let me ask you this. How shocked would you be if they extend Marcus Wheaton this offseason?
I'd be pretty shocked because I think Wheaton would rather bet on himself and have a really strong year and earn that market value that all these receivers cashed in this year.
Okay, so in other words, if you got to admit, odds are good of him at least hitting free agency.
Yeah, I mean, Pittsburgh, if they want to retain a guy, though, they usually do a good job of keeping him around. And knowing Martavis Bryant's situation, maybe they have that stronger play. Obviously, you don't really plan for Bryant's second contract, or at least definitely not the money that it might have ended up being. I just who knows? The landscape's going to change so much from in a year, and I don't like to spend a whole lot of time thinking about it.
Now, if Martavis Bryant hadn't, had the problems that he's had, mm-hmm. by even the potential loss of Wheaton, next off season, I would say, oh man, I just can't see the Steelers drafting a wide receiver. But I really think now, I think I'll be shocked if they don't.
And that's why, as much as I say I don't think about Wheaton's situation, I mean, I do in the sense that I understand that he could be gone. And that's why I'm not opposed, and that's why I'm not ruling out the idea of a Corey Coleman or Josh Doctson, at 25. If that's head and shoulders, your best player on the board, and let's say a Billings is gone, let's say a William Jackson is gone, let's say even a Noah Spence is off the board, and you have a Corey Coleman or a Josh Doctson sitting there, I mean, I bet, the range from where they're at on their board to the next closest guy, let's say it's a Carl Joseph or a Reggie Ragland or whatever name you want to put in, a Correa, the gap between Coleman and Correa is probably going to be pretty sizable. So if you're looking in terms of the way that you stack your board and the way that you value your picks and the way you grade player X to player Y, I think you're going to see a sizable gap. And I think from that standpoint, at the very least, it's going to be difficult to ignore a guy like a Coleman or a Doctson. And then when you understand the future need for it, or if you draft one, now you're not worried about losing Wheaton. If you do, it might be unfortunate, but you certainly, you're restocked, you're reloaded. You're not going to be at a risk to overpay for Marcus Wheaton or feel obligated to bring him back. I think there are very strong reasons to bring in a wide receiver at 25. Is it going to happen? I mean, who knows? We'll see how the board lays out. But I think if the board falls the right way, and by the right way, I almost mean the wrong way, where some of the guys that you love are off the board, I think you really could entertain the idea of a receiver at 25.
And it would have to be someone like a Coleman or Dotson, yeah. In my opinion.
I mean, those are the only two guys that I would take at receiver. I wouldn't take a Michael Thomas. I wouldn't take a Treadwell if he falls. I think it's Coleman, Dotson. Those are the only two guys at receiver. I mean, you're just saying, in talent, I mean, what's the difference between, you know, Corey Coleman and Correa in terms of talent? The gap is pretty huge, I think.
Right, right, most definitely. Now, which way was I wanting to attack this? When you circle, let's circle back to the possible, or let's stay on the possible 25th overall selection, the Steelers' first round pick, and analyze it from which position stands the greatest chance of seeing average to significant playing time during that player's rookie season. I think it's it's not an offensive lineman, right?
Right.
It's not a cornerback. I mean, it's not a quarterback. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's definitely not a tight end. It's not a running back. So, you know, wide receiver, you could make some arguments for certain players that they could see time as a rookie, but that's in on offense, right?
Yeah, and even receiver, I mean, I'll admit, you're not going to see significant time. I mean, I would consider 2016 as a redshirt year for most receivers brought in.
Right. So, you know, it would have to be, as Kevin Colbert likes to say, one of those two receivers would have to really be viewed as a special player, you know, and the odds of that probably happening, because if they are a special player, they're probably already off the board by then. But, you know, that's why you'll never see me mock a wide receiver to them in the first round right now. Okay, now let's move over to the same train of thought and talk about the defensive side of football. Safety in the first round, depending on the player, I think, i.e. Carl Joseph, is about the only player, in my opinion, that could see, you know, average to significant playing time in the Steelers defense as a rookie. Agree or disagree?
I disagree, because even if it is Carl Joseph, you know, I'm assuming that Joseph's still going to miss the spring. And any time a rookie's going to miss, you know, rookie minicamp and OTAs and minicamp, it really puts you behind the eight ball. So even if Joseph is ready for training camp, which he, you know, said he expects to be, that learning curve is even steeper, you know, just for any rookie, but especially, you know, a safety trying to crack a starting lineup over Robert Golden, who knows this system. So, I mean, I think it would be very tough for any safety, much less a guy like Joseph, to see the field, at least within the first half of the season.
And that's a great argument. And that's a great argument as to why Joseph probably shouldn't be the pick.
I mean, he shouldn't be the pick if you want year one, you know, contribution. If you're looking long term, if you're looking in that scope, then you can have a different argument. But if you're looking for a guy, hey, guys, we need someone to come in right away and really make an impact for this defense, put us over the top, Joseph just can't be your guy.
Barring any injury with the guys already on the Steelers roster and taking any safety that the Steelers should ultimately draft, what's the best case scenario for the amount of snaps that said player can get? 200?
You're talking safety?
Right.
I don't have a great number for you right now. I just think it's a position that's very difficult in general to crack. When you're competing, especially with Robert Golden, it's a very difficult position to learn here in Pittsburgh, because they're kind of interchangeable with strong safety and free safety, and you have to do so much. I might be 200 snaps. I think you could put him in some sub-package football the way that Golden did it last year, the last, you know, quarter of the season. You know, if you're moving on to cornerback, if you don't crack the top three spots, you're not going to play. If you crack the nickel spot, which I don't, you know, maybe you do, maybe you don't, you could get up to 70% of the time. Outside linebacker, you know, it's really hard to say. I think you could get 40% of the snaps. I have no problem putting Arthur Motes back on the bench. He did it in 2014. You go back, look, 2 years ago, the last quarter of the season, Motes played like 10 snaps. I mean, he just didn't play. You can do it again. Inside linebacker, the snaps won't be there year one. Nose tackle, you can get up to 67% of the snaps if you really want to. I think more realistically, you can play about 50%. If you're looking for a true defensive end that can't play the nose, then you're only looking at about 30 to 35% of the snaps. So, You know, I think honestly, nose tackle has the most snaps there for the taking, and then maybe an edge guy, and then maybe a safety.
You knew that was the way I was going with this, right?
The way your mind works.
In other words, and as usual, people are kind of split on this, but I think more and more people are coming over to the side of an Andrew Billings type of player because of the potential of him playing 50 to 60% of the snaps.
Right. And you know, I've kind of mentioned it a couple of times, and I have it all written out, which we're going to see here in a couple of weeks for that war room exercise that we did on Inside the Pylon. But, you know, for people that don't wrap their – because I saw some other media guys talk about it, and it just – it grinds my the Family Guy
it
reference.
It does me, too. I want to do some very Dave-like things on Twitter. But I've bit my fingers.
Bit your tongue. I see the blogger reference. But to take the Family Guy reference, it grinds my gears because, you know, and we both love Ed Boucher, but he was talking about, you know, nose tackle is only going to play 35% of the time. That's true if you're going to get just a true run stuffing nose tackle. But knowing a Billings or a Butler or someone like that are good pass rushers, their ceiling is way above 35%. And let me just do the quick math. For you, because it's bugged me so much. Let's assume. Let's take.
We need a math sound effect for a math warning followed by a signing for the podcast.
Let's continue
on with your Friday math.
Let's assume that, you know, the Steelers again play 1,100 snaps on defense, which they did last year. Cam Hayward and Stephon Tuitt played about 90% of the time last year. We want to get them down to about 80%. Still playing a ton. I don't want to take him off the field too much. But Tomlin can agree. You know, Hayward agreed. They all kind of need a little bit of a breather. So let's get them down to 80% of the snaps. 80% of 1,100 is 880 snaps. That means for each Hayward and Tuitt, there were 220 snaps still out there for the taking. Combined, that's 440. Let's say the Steelers play about the same number of base defense they did last year. It was 305 snaps, about 27% of the time. So you have 305, you know, nose tackle snaps in base, and then you have 440, you know, Hayward Tuitt replacement snaps to go through. That's 740 snaps. That's 67%. And so when someone says, you know, how do you get a guy to 67% and still play Hayward and Tuitt at 80, that's the way you do it. Now, I'm sure you're not going to be able to play that guy, you know, in Hayward and Tuitt all the time. But I think realistically you can get him to about 55 to maybe even, you know, a little bit above the snaps. And that's not even assuming an injury happening to Hayward or Tuitt like it did for Tuitt two games last year. So when people tell me, you know, the nose tackle is only going to play 35% of the time, they're not thinking about it enough. They're not looking at the right guy because the snaps are certainly there. You got 740 snaps you need to take. I don't think people realize how many snaps are really out there.
Right, and to bet 100% that Tuitt and Hayward are not going to get dinged up in some capacity next season is really wishful thinking.
Right. I mean, Hayward played close to, I think, over 1,200 snaps this year if you include the playoffs, and you certainly should. I mean, those guys got to be tired. You can't wear them out. You can't ask them to play 1,200 snaps again.
And people think when we talk sub-package snaps, too, they think we're predominantly talking about third down. But, boy, this team had to play a lot of second down.
Oh, yeah.
Sub-package snaps, too. And then, of course, when you get inside 2 minutes – of halves in the end of the game as well, too, team. You know, you're more times than not, you're going to have your sub package out there as well, too. Why such? And look, we have some very knowledgeable commenters on Steelers Depot, but a few of them just really take issue with Billings being the pick.
Yeah, people say he's not a good enough pass rusher. People say he can't play the five. First of all, the five technique is barely even used in Pittsburgh now. It's really the four or an inside shade over the tackle. You know, I'm all for if you can get Billings on maybe first down to play the one tech, and plug the run. And if you give Hayward or Tua a breather, so on third and long, you can move Hayward or Tua it, you know, back in a little bit fresher to get that pass rush, you know, even better than what Billings can do. I think you have a great rotation going on there. So, I mean, I'm all for Billings. I think most people have warmed up to the idea. I think a lot of people do realize that you can get a lot more snaps than just pure nose tackle snaps. I think there's just some people that kind of like to hang their hat on just that number without really having to put a much more thought into it.
And the thing is, I think, too, is and look, you got pushback from me originally several weeks ago when you brought Billings to the table. But, however, I hadn't watched the amount of film that I have since on him.
Right. And I don't think McClendon was officially gone by then either.
Right. True. And the thing is, too, is when you look at how he was used at Baylor, when you look at the kind of production that he had in obvious passing downs, when you look at Mike Tomlin saying that nose tackles of the future have to be able to play sub-package football, when you look at the fact that I've said it from day one on Daniel McCullers, I just don't think he's the future guy that you want. And when you, and especially when you look back, I remember doing a study a few weeks ago. They didn't trust him in the nickel. You know, they played him some last year, but it was in – if you go back and you count the legitimate snaps, meaningful situations with him, you get about 10 sub-package snaps out of Daniel McCullers last year.
Yeah, I mean, he's not, he's not a nickel rusher. I mean, he's not a nickel rusher.
Right, right. So – A, you could be in the mindset, well, okay, Dave, that's all right. We just want to use him as a run plugger only. Okay, I see that. But who are you – okay, okay, he can't play nickel. Okay, that's the argument. All right, well, who are you going to get to play to alleviate some of the snaps from Hayward into it? You know, say what you will about – help me out. I'm already drawing a blank with a Charger guy they just signed.
Ricardo Matthews.
Yeah, Ricardo, say what you will about him. You don't want him on the field that much.
And that contract tells you all you need to know about the potential there.
Right, right. So, I mean, Cam Thomas is gone. McClendon's gone. Face it, we don't know what LT Walton or the other young player defensive end that they have is. Odds, I mean, there's good chance you can make arguments that neither will make the roster this year.
Yeah, I think if you can get, you know, Hayward to it, let's just say a Billings or Matthews, and then, you know, I don't know, maybe a McCullers for one more go around. I think that's a really strong, you know, defensive line group, and you've added some important depth, and I think you're a whole lot better depth wise than you were last year.
So you would admit that nose tackles, a player nose tackle slash that could give you snaps as a defensive tackle in your nickel front stands the most chance when it comes to positions for the Steelers this year that they could possibly draft in the first round that could potentially see the most playing time his rookie season.
I think it's right up there with any other position. Again, I mean, you know, hypothetically, if you can go to the maximum of 67% that I just talked about, and even if you draft a corner, and even if he's able to be the nickel, you know, the sub-package guy from day one, which is no given, even if he can do that, he's going to play about 70% of the time. So in year one value, you have a corner who's going to play 70%, and then you have a, you know, nose tackle who could play up to 67%. That number is not that far away, and it doesn't really make much of a difference, that 3%. So sure. I mean, you know, I've been open to it this whole time, and I think the math, you know, when you really do the math, you really think about it for a second, the snaps are certainly there. Again, 740 snaps you're looking to replace, you know, the guys that you need to replace, McClendon and to give, you know, Tua and Hayward breathers, and that's no small number.
Oh, I forgot which way I was going to go with this. Well, it's a perfect time to kind of segue into my most recent mock draft before, you know, so we can wrap up this show. And I got Alex, I did something that's very rare. I got a very favorable response from most of the commenters on Steelers Depot when it comes to my mock draft. So that means I did something wrong.
It was a nice change of pace for mine. You were getting some good love on there.
Yeah, if there was some sort of off-season trophy to be handed out to most like mock draft, I think I just won the Heisman. related to a net scare. So let's go over this. I mean, we obviously went over yours. I told you what I didn't like about yours. It's your turn to return the favor here. All right, let's start off with my first pick, and we've already beat this horse to death, Andrew Billings. And some people say, well, what, you know, that's the same guy you had in your second mock draft. I really had no reason to change. Mm-hmm. I know you tend to think that Billings could be off the board by then, and I agree. There's really two teams I think that could be the team to snag him there. You know, probably late in the first round. That would probably be what, the Minnesota Vikings and the Washington Redskins. And
those are the exact two ones I was just thinking of. Yep.
Okay, so I like his chances to fall. You don't, and that's probably the only issue that you have with that selection.
Yep, that's the only problem I have. If he's there and they take him, I'll be one happy Alex.
All right, round two. Now, I really was tempted to pencil in Carl Joseph here, but in real-world scenario, I think, even though I think that Carl Joseph doesn't ultimately go in the first round, which that means absolutely nothing, the chances of him falling to the Steelers in the second round, probably not great. Mm-hmm. So, once again, this is kind of a repeat of my first mock draft. You know, take your pick, you know, whatever your flavored ice cream is in this situation, whether it be Neil, whether it be Thompson, whether it be Von Bell, whether it be Cash. I chose Neil. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I mean, I really get the idea. In my next mock, I'm probably going to change to put a second round of safety in, because I feel like that's maybe the one certainty that we have in a very uncertain process. You know, Neil's cut, big hitter. I mean, an impact guy. He's going to be that classic box guy, 6'5", 211 pounds. You know, I think he's had a lot of, you know, mental blips in coverage. That doesn't mean he's Shamarco Thomas. People kind of make that comparison too loosely, I think. You know, how people learn and process and get better with the right coaching doesn't mean that, you know, everyone's going to be the Shamarco Thomas, you know, Sharks issues. They're not, you know, going to be a given to somebody else. But yeah, I like that pick. I think it's actually a really good chance that's where they go at 58.
All right, round three, Malcolm Mitchell, real quick. I know you're not a fan of a wide receiver in the third round. Malcolm Mitchell, another carryover from my last mock as well. More tape I watched on him, the more I like. You think maybe a cornerback there, right?
I mean, I went corner. I'm okay with a receiver there. Mitchell's has some injury concerns, but there's a lot of people that like him. You know, he had a good week at the Senior Bowl. And again, I see the idea of trying to be have some foresight with the receiver position going into 2017.
You could probably flip Mitchell in my fourth round draft pick and make people even happier.
Yeah.
with what I've done. And I don't need to sell my fourth round pick, Jonathan Jones, to you. I see him being a fourth rounder. You probably see him as a third rounder. You probably see Malcolm Mitchell maybe as a fourth rounder. So theoretically, if I swap those two picks, I would have you on board, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's exactly what I would do. I would swap those two picks. I think he even told someone in the comment section about that. So yeah, I think you do that, and I'm happy.
Is there any other kind of real quick? Is there any other kind of receiver you would throw into that third, fourth round mix?
A receiver?
Yeah.
Leonte Carew from Rutgers. I think, you know, that could be a guy. I'm trying to think anybody else that I really, really like there. No one's coming to mind right now. I think Mitchell and Carew are two guys that I would look at.
And then as far as, you know, if you had to wait till fourth round to get a corner, it would be probably one of the several kids that they brought in for pre-draft visits. So you could probably pencil in several names into that spot for round four if you waited that long, right?
Yeah, you could do a DJ White, a Tavon Young, some other guys I'm probably missing right now. I think it might be too early for Ryan Smith. But yeah, I mean, you have your mid-round corner, and there are so many different directions you could go.
A little bit of a wild card in round six for me. The Steelers obviously have interest in him at his pro day. Would be a quote-unquote interesting selection. Tyler Irvin, running back out of San Jose State. I know you're a fan of his as well.
I love Irvin. I've loved Irvin for a while now, and I think he's going to go higher than round six. I mean, I put like a third round on him. I think he can go in the fourth. People might say we don't want another Archer, but Irvin's a lot tougher. than Drew Archer ever's been. Irvin's a guy that's willing and able to run inside, and Archer could never do that. And if you look at Irvin's return value, you know, obviously he's going to have big marks there, and what you can do with him out of the backfield. I know people will say they're tired of seeing the same kind of guy, and I get that point, but I think Irvin's just a really talented player, and if you get him in round six, I'm doing cartwheels.
You could fathom, though, a sixth or seventh round running back in this draft, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, if once you get into six and seven, I mean, you're just looking at talent in the positions. You know, you worry less about the positions because you hope no one has to make an immediate impact, you know, no matter who you take there, unless the play really dictates it. But, yeah, I mean, I could see a late-round running back. I wouldn't be crazy about it, but I could see it happening.
And round seven, you know, I have the UCLA lineman that just visited, Caleb Benenock. That made the choice kind of easy once they brought him in. I tend to like him a little better than the other, than Hawkins, who they brought in for a visit. But you could potentially see, regardless of the name, a tackle who could maybe give you some snaps at guard going late in this draft, right?
Yeah, I could see a tackle. I think if you made me choose, I'm looking at they're going to take an interior guy a little more than tackle, since they already brought in Ryan Harris. You know, considering the interest in Schwartz and Wisniewski, two more primarily interior guys. That's why I went with Sakura out of Duke in my mock. He went tackle in this one. But, you know, this guy fits, you know, our criteria. He's long. He's a big guy. You know, from a good school. So, you know, I don't know if Carnell Lake was there whenever he was there. I don't know the timeline off the top of my head. I don't think he was. But, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and then round seven, I mean, throw your, you know, a London Roberts, the inside linebacker out of Houston, who there's a chance he might even go undrafted. You know, you could make a look, this team needs another inside linebacker for competition more than anything else. Yes, they signed Steven Johnson during the offseason. He's a special teams guy. Vince Williams was not under contract past this year. Right now, neither is Lawrence Timmons. This team lost Sean Spence, Terrence Garvin. Roberts is just probably a flavor that you know is easy to link to the Steelers right now. But could you see either Roberts or some sort of inside linebacker with a tilt towards special teams being a late round selection?
Sure, I think there's a lot of value in that. I think that's a seventh round guy that you could get a contribution from on special teams right away. And if you can do that, you know, you've already kind of, you know, almost succeeded as your seventh round pick. So I think Roberts is a good athlete. I think he timed really well. His production, I'm pretty sure, was off the charts at Houston last year. So that would make sense. Blake Martinez would make sense. Nick Kwiatkowski out of West Virginia is kind of the guy I really like out of that pack. But all six, seven-round guys that could be, you know, potential special teams contributors right away.
All right, real quick, the thing you hate most about my mock draft is?
Oh, I know that, you had, Billings, Neal, and Mitchell in your last mock and this one, right?
Yes.
All right, so points deducted for lack of originality. and then, I don't know, I know you hate it, and I'm not a big fan of it too, but some of the slotting, I think Jones is going to go higher. I think Irvin's going to go higher. So I think some of those guys got a little undersold in your mock.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to change my mocks just for the sake of changing.
I know,
you know?
I just a mess.
And I know you did in yours because primarily you kind of get the impression that, well, A, you wanted to throw some new names out there, and B, you tend to think that Billings might not be on the board. But for those listening, we'll try to get Alex and I will try to get one more mock draft out in the coming weeks before our final one surfaces there. So stay tuned to that. Always good conversation that goes on in these things. Alex, we're running out of time on this Friday. We'll have plenty to talk about again on Monday. You'll probably be with me again for that one as well, too. Thanks for sitting in for David Todd once again. Big help and great, great dialogue, I thought, today specifically. So, folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kazora. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate, we encourage you to do so. Go to SteelersDepot.com. In the navigational bar, you'll see the donate button for PayPal there. We appreciate everybody that has in the last couple weeks as well that have done that. Happy Friday, everyone. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.